Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks, and Nihei Debiru. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. If you have any upcoming martial arts seminars, tournaments, or events, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce them on the show. I recently had a chance to sit down with my longtime friend Charles Robertson. Charles began studying martial arts 25 years ago at the Academy of Okinawan Karate in Peoria, Illinois, where we worked out together under Shion Joseph Walker. At the beginning of the show, Charles talks about how he got started in the martial arts and some of the severe medical problems he had to overcome to continue training. We then get into his competition career and share a few blood and guts stories after the break. At the end of the show, Charles talks about his family supporting him during his martial arts training and dealing with the passing of his mother. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. All right, I'm sitting here with my good buddy, Charles Robertson. How you doing, Chuck?
I'm doing good.
Good. Haven't seen you for a while.
Haven't seen you either for a while either.
Good to catch up. But we've known each other for a real long time.
Yes.
Basically 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah, you taught me some of my very first karate lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you, so you've been, when did you start karate? When did you get involved in it?
When I got involved in it, it was June 2nd of 90.
June 2nd of 1990. Man, 24 years ago. Well, how did you get started? What got you interested to begin with?
Karate movies, Bruce Lee movies.
Okay.
I was always fascinated with Bruce Lee doing nunchaku and all that, and ninja movies, and
yeah,
started collecting swords and stuff like that.
Okay, so you had all these swords on your wall.
On the wall.
But you didn't know how to use them.
Didn't know how to use them. I knew how to swing the sword because I watched Highlander too much.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I did the same thing. I loved Highlander. That's one of the things that got me interested in it, too. Yeah.
And, but really, one of my good friends, Tony Franks, he was in Taekwondo.
Okay.
No offense to teach stuff, you know, but...
Right.
He thought he was Mr. Cool, knows how to kick high and all that. One day, yeah, put him in his place. I was like, grabbed his leg, threw him on the ground. And I was like, nope, you need a little more.
He needs to learn the discipline of it, when to use it. This is before you were in karate.
Before, right? I didn't even karate.
Okay, so you snatched his kick out of the air, tossed him on the ground, and told him to knock that shit off, right?
Right.
Okay.
But I really enjoy karate for a long time. Mm-hmm. Used to go to karate tournaments all the time.
I know you were big into... So after... Well, let's go back. So after your buddy was involved, you had the swords. What got you... What kickstarted you to get in the dojo to actually work out?
To get in the dojo to really work out, I was under pressure. I wanted to do guitar, but I really had a desire to do karate.
Okay.
So when I made the choice between guitar or karate, I just went with karate and better discipline myself and focus on me.
And when you got into it, I mean, you got into it.
I got heavy duty.
You were working out about every day. I mean, you would, by the time I started, you'd already been there for, I guess, about 5 years.
5 years.
You were brown belt. You were working out, teaching.
Teaching.
Doing everything. And not just the karate, but the weapons.
The weapons.
Kabuto, sword, a little bit of judo. A
little bit of judo. Oh. I was rough in judo.
Well, you're kind of skinny.
I was skinny, yeah. I was, like, fragile at that time.
Right.
Well, you know, that's another thing I wanted to ask you about. I know that, you know, when you've told me before that when you started, you had a couple medical issues.
I had medical issues.
I mean, what was it exactly that...
I had cold shoulder spine.
Okay.
And cold shoulder shoulders, and one false move, I could be paralyzed from waist down or waist up.
Oh, my God. And so this, when you got involved in it, this is probably not your doctor's recommendation.
Not my doctor's recommendation.
And what did they say about it?
They said that it was a bad move to do because if you get seriously hurt, you could be paralyzed. I was like, Doc, I'm sorry. It's my life. You're just getting a paycheck. That's all you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this would be better for me to fully understand the human body at karate.
Mm-hmm.
That way I can build myself to be a better man to overcome this.
So you were looking at it from not... I think you were looking at it to help build your own body. Because
build my own body.
Maybe you had... Either you were a little bit sheltered by your family or maybe yourself. Maybe not taking part in the physical activities and things like that, sports.
Yes.
But you wanted to find a way to kind of... strengthen yourself, but also mentally.
Mentally, I was pretty broken up and everything else, and family was, my parents had issues and mm-hmm. with each other, and I just wanted to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was very supportive, my mom was very supportive, but there were so many different treatments for this disease.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, if we could put a needle in your spine and inject you with something to straighten it out, it was in the experimental stage back in the 90s.
Okay, okay.
And my mom's like, how much would this cost? This would cost this much,
mm-hmm.
like thousands of thousands of dollars. And my mom's like, no. I'm not risking
money. You just can't do it.
I couldn't do it. Because what happens if the spine... discharges, ejects it,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be in battle shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, no.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I don't think a lot of people really know about that, the fact that you were told that you could be paralyzed or even killed if something went wrong.
Something.
Now, you kept that to yourself.
Yes.
You didn't walk in and announce that to anybody.
No.
To the instructor, to the other students.
No.
Why?
Because I was more afraid for myself and the students seeing what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
I was skillful myself, mm-hmm. letting anybody know the secret.
Okay, so you were afraid that of telling them your weakness, or they're afraid that they were going to take it easy on you?
Take it easy on me.
That's what you were afraid of. You wanted to be treated just like everybody else.
Like, as a normal human being like you and me.
Right.
And... nobody needs to know, and, you know, there were some days, it was kind of rough in karate, and
yeah.
I was pushed myself even beyond to have a normal, try to keep my back straight and everything else, and that's why I was determined to get stronger or weaker,
mm-hmm.
and I was more improving each time.
Mm-hmm.
And
because a lot of the techniques that we're doing, you know, you're working on your posture,
right.
We're working on the kicks and the balance. I mean, everything the techniques they improved your condition. I'm assuming they helped improve it. Use it as a therapy, and you weren't afraid to get in there and mix it up. You were sparring with everybody else. You were doing the applications with everybody else, self-defenses. You didn't want to hang back and say, hey, I'm delicate, I've got this condition.
Yeah.
You wanted to jump right in
there. I just jumped right in and did what I could. And if I slap out, I slap out.
Yeah.
I wasn't afraid to mix it up. But, there were some times that I did have accidents when I was a kid, and like falling off a sliding board and laying on my head, and I was kind of had to go to a therapist to put my neck back in place.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, everything else turned out great. I got stronger.
Sure.
And my parents supported me on all the karate tournaments and all that. My dad went to all the karate tournaments. And I really had a good time.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATEC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATEC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATEC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com.
Well, let's talk about that a minute, because you were really big into competition. I mean, you were the guy from the school who was always hitting different tournaments, traveling around, doing different seminars, and and really making an effort, getting out there.
Yes, so, I was really putting an advertisement for the school and everything else too. And they're like, "What school are you from?" Academy Okinawa Karate. Who's teaching? Joe Walkle. And since the location of Joe Walkle's school was in Sheridan at that time.
At that time, yeah.
And everybody was just like, "Oh, that's a small, dinky little school," and he wasn't moved into a big old school like Phil Keppel was.
Because that's where, that was maybe his second location. It wasn't that big at the time. No. Until he moved later. And that's, I joined after they moved to the school on Knoxville, which was much larger.
Much larger.
Yeah. What are some of your tournament highlights?
Some of my tournament highlights. The first one I went to was Sue Kim's.
Okay.
I showed up. I had Scoyne with me. And
Kevin Scoyne.
Kevin Scoyne and David Bowl, I think it is.
Oh,
Bowling, I think it was.
Dave Bowling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they beat me.
Wait, they're from your school, and they had you in the same division?
Yes.
You didn't even get to fight somebody from a different school?
Oh, I did.
Oh, okay.
I fought one of the T-Roll people, and I got the wind knocked out of me because he landed two punches and knocked the wind out of me. And I was like, "I'm done." But I knew my limitations. I was like, "Nope, I'm done."
Yeah.
And some of the tournament highlights, I went to Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Okay.
In 96, and competed this year with Fort Wayne, and Mr. Bowles was in charge, and he was the host of it. Got to meet him, and won at that tournament. I just did weapons and kata. And
very nice. Did you win both divisions?
I won both divisions.
Kata and weapons, all right.
And my dad was ill. He took pictures, and I was part of it, and came back home and celebrated with my parents and went out to eat.
Nice. Well, I know that since you were the guy who was traveling around and going to a lot of these different things, I mean, a lot of people out there have said to me they had a lot of respect for you, that you know that you obviously had the physical challenges, but you were in there working out and doing everything anyway. I know Mr. Keppel said that to me, Mr. Bowles, and several others, you know, that you were really, you know, making the most of what you had and really really doing well.
Well, there was one time I was really nervous at Phil Keppel's tournament.
Okay.
When he had it back over in down at the Pillmore Cat. It was my first real tournament with those guys.
Okay, with all the karate guys.
With all the karate.
From that group?
From that group. And I did weapons and kata. And Scoyne was ill, and Dave was ill, and Sheehan showed up. My dad was velvet taping it, and I never seen a big tournament like this.
So I wasn't. You've been to a lot of the smaller local
tournaments.
But this is a national, kind of international tournament. This is a big tournament.
It's a big tournament. It was like 30 people in one division.
Wow.
Weapons. And I was like, man, this is big. I wasn't used to this huge people hill. I'm like, so we got up, the other thing, Scoring took second, Dave took first with comma, and I didn't get anything on that one. I was like, okay, that ain't that bad. At least these two are having fun. That's all that counts for me.
Yeah, and, the guys from your school won, so that's good.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then the empty hand, I ran with him again, and Scoring didn't win.
Okay.
I won.
First place?
No.
Okay.
Dave won.
Oh, first place.
Okay. He won the first place. I got the third place.
Okay.
And Scoring was so upset, but he was also happy for me since he was like, I should have won because I ran Bossa Dai. I'm like, I ran Pasai, so.
Yeah. Well, it's tough to say what the judge, but I can picture Kevin Scoring doing. He's such a nice guy, but he's also a good competitor. So yeah. He's probably super happy for you, but also super angry that he didn't do better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was like, I can't figure out. Why didn't they like my Bossa Dai? But they liked yours. I'm like, I don't know. Can't figure out myself.
Yeah, you weren't going to argue.
I wasn't going to argue with him on the judges on that one.
No. But you also, anytime that there was a seminar or an event or like another kata was going to be taught at a seminar, you always went and you always learned it.
Yes.
And then it would be 5 or 10 years later, you and I'd be the only people who still ran.
Yeah. There was one time Shinhan taught Shirotaro.
Okay, Shirotaro no Kone, the bow kata.
The bow kata. And there was a 1 day seminar, and then there was a tournament right after.
Okay.
On the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody was teaching. Scoring taught Shirotaro. Mm-hmm. I picked that up like that.
Right.
And then everybody was teaching Sai, and I got most of it, and I lost it. But I kept Shirotaro in the arsenal, because that was my favorite kata I wanted to learn.
And that's still your go-to, right?
That was my go-to kata, right there.
And anytime you did a tournament or anything like that, that's what you did.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then my open hand kata I used when Shinhan taught in Sessin and everything else, he taught Goju katas.
Mm-hmm.
I had Cypher, knee something.
A gex was a gexai dai each, gexai dai knee, Cypher.
Xion Chin. Those are the ones I had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept that one, and still kept the other ones in the back of my head.
Yeah.
And I won the one from Gopaisho. If I didn't win with Gopaisho, I went with the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And the judges liked that one better than that one.
Yeah, it's always funny. You never know what the judges are going to like. Sometimes they like the easier kata.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. I'll run that. But it was always great because I knew that if you and I ever had learned a kata at the same time, I could always go back if I forgot something. Hey, Charles, what was this move? I could review it with you because you'd still work it, years, decades later. Where somebody else might work it for a couple weeks or something.
Like that. And last year, he taught a different bow kata of Shirotaro, like simple to Shirotaro.
Okay.
I forget the name of it, but.
I don't know what the name would be.
But doing the bow seminar, I showed up, ran it with the group.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, Shinhan goes, Charles, you know Shirotaro, get out, he'll run it. And I bowed and ran Shirotaro again, and everybody's like this, he still got that kata? And we don't even know that kata. How the heck he still got it?
See, that's how you catch people. People underestimate you.
Yes.
And you get them. They think you don't remember this kata, you can't do that, you can't punch, or something like that. This little skinny guy, and then you get him.
But I do have fun moments when my mom took me all the kata tournaments, when she went to Chicago
mm-hmm.
to Gary Gillette's tournaments. John Vincent, you know, probably John Vincent.
Yeah, I've met him.
He was there, and he was always a friendly guy. And
oh, yeah, real outgoing.
Real outgoing guy and everything else, and Gary's always so friendly, outgoing, too, and they're like, oh, Charles' family, oh, that'd be $5. $5 for the whole group, or just $5 for my family? Oh, that's $5 for the family, Charles. You're one of our regular pals, Hill.
Oh, wow. That's great. Gave you the loyalty discount.
Loyalty discount. So that was always a good thing.
Sure. Well, you guys drove up all the way up from, you know, from Peoria to Chicago. It's 3 hours or something. And, you know, he's probably known you from the other tournaments and things. Yes. So that was a really nice thing for him to do.
But I always pitching it like, no, he's 10. He's like, no. I'm like, no, save it for the rainy day or something.
Right.
And afterwards, we always go out and eat and stuff like that. And one day, after the tournament was over, he goes, I know you guys got a long drive to go. You want anything in America or anything like that? And he goes, no, I'm good. Thank you. He was always so polite. He was always so nice to my family and stuff like that.
Oh, that's great. And that goes a long way.
That goes a long way.
Sure.
Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, coworker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
I remember you were the guy, speaking of you and me working out together, you were the guy who was teaching me when I broke my hip.
Yeah. I knew you were going to bring that up.
You were a brown belt. I was a yellow belt.
Yeah.
You were having me do sidekicks.
Yeah. And all of a sudden your hip gave out or broke or something, a piece of bone broke out.
Well, we were doing the sidekicks because the deal was that I had broken my wrist.
Right.
The weekend before sparring.
I was
a yellow belt at the time, but I was sparring one of the brown belts at the school, Cyrus Irani, good brown belt. And I blocked a kick with my open hand, came back, broke my wrist.
Right.
So, when class rolled around on Monday, I obviously couldn't do any punches.
Right.
So, you were working with me on the kicks.
Right.
Because even though I had the cast on, I was still pretty sore. And I couldn't
You were
do
still pretty sore right. without the cast on.
So, I was working on these kicks, and you're having me do side kicks. And I think, what'd you say? You know, you can kick higher than that, something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm doing these kicks, you know, above head high, and all of a sudden, one goes out, and I hear pop, 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 pop. I heard and felt these pops, and I hit the ground.
And I said, Scorn, we need you over here quickly. I think we had, Nate fell down, and we called your uncle or something like that to come get you, take you to the hospital. And
right.
I felt so horrible. I thought, oh, what have I done? And everybody's like, Chuck, you screwed up. And I'm like, yeah, but he couldn't do punches. He couldn't do back side falls or anything like that because he broke his wrist. Okay, I can understand that. Because I was being symptomatic for your injury.
Right, you were working on one of the injuries.
One of the injuries. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let your conscience off the hook here, Charles. It had nothing to do with, you were teaching a great class.
Right.
It was one of those fluke injuries that who knows how exactly it happened. But what happened was that hamstring contracted when I had the side kick up and pulled, where it connected to the pelvis, it pulled that whole chunk of bone out.
Oh.
So it's not like I was doing a side kick and you swept my leg out from underneath me. You started beating me with a staff or anything like that. It was just bizarre fluke accident.
Right.
But I remember everybody, they got me up and put me in the chair until they could get somebody to come over and take me to the emergency room.
Right.
And Mr. Beckendorf was there. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I remember this.
He comes over and he goes, well, how you doing, Nate? I said, I'm fine. Oh, it hurts. And he goes, watch your etiquette. And I'm like, yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir. It really hurts, sir. He's like, that's better.
Yeah.
So I went to the emergency room and it ripped that chunk of bone out of my hip. Kind of a bizarre injury.
Huh.
It wasn't your fault.
No.
You just happened to be there.
Yes. Then also I was awful when Tony broke his hand.
Oh my God. All right, let's get into the blood and gut stories here. We haven't had some good ones. All right, you started off, and I'll add the gruesome details.
Well, it was break day at karate school, and
right.
Tony, he set up his wood and all this, and he was going to go down and broke it like
so
this.
He had the two cinder blocks, and yeah. He had, I want to say five or six.
He had six.
I don't want to exaggerate. I want to make sure I'm six. Right. It was six. It was six boards stacked together. Now, if there's some non-karate people listening, you got to understand, a lot of times when you see the breaks on TV, they stack the boards. So they'll put a little spacer, sometimes they'll use a pencil. And what that does is it means when you hit the board, you have to break one board, and then it goes down and breaks a second board, and those two go down and break the third board. So breaking spaced boards is much easier than breaking stacked together boards. So if you stack two boards together, or three or four or five. I mean, if you're stacking five, if you're stacking three boards together, you can basically stand on it.
Yes.
And it won't break. So if you're stacking four or five and it was six.
Six.
Okay, six boards together. That is a very impressive break. And normally if somebody's going to do a break like that, they're going to hit it either with a hammer fist, minimum, or really probably a stomp kick is what's going to get through it.
Yes.
But Tony decided to break it with
his hand.
With a punch.
With a punch.
Straight down. What happened?
Me hit all of it. Three bolts still remain. And he hit the bolt wrong and dislocated these two.
Oh, but you're not telling the best part. You're just getting to the gruesome details.
Yeah.
Okay. The best part was Shion, who is Tony's stepfather. In fact, in last week's show, or it depends on when I air this, but in a few weeks ago in the show, Joey Johnston, who was Tony's younger brother, was on, talked about how he had a whole family that was in karate. Well, Tony was the oldest brother.
Yes.
And Shion, the instructor, was his stepfather.
Yes.
So, when Tony stacked these boards up and was lining up to break them with a punch,
yes.
Shion goes, are you really sure you want to do that?
Yes.
And at that point, there was nothing that anybody could have done. He was going to try to break those things with a punch.
Yes.
And he lined up and he punched it once. Nothing happened.
Nothing.
Right? The first one. And I was 2 or 3 feet away from this thing when this happened. I was standing right there. He lined up and he punched it and nothing broke. It made two little divots.
Yes.
On the top of the board, right?
Yes.
Well, tell me if I'm exaggerating any of this.
No.
But nothing broke. He lined up and punched it again, and that's when
the three bolt broke, and he went up and grabbed his hand,
mm-hmm.
and he finished up with a stomp kick, finished the rest of them off. He bows off. He goes into the back room,
mm-hmm.
and he's holding his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I knew he broke something.
And I saw it, because I was a couple feet away. I saw that thing. When he punched it the second time, all the bones from the back of his hand, it bowed up
Yes.
And I'm like, my God, he just broke every bone in his hand because it looked like a compound fracture.
Yes.
Because that bone was sticking. Now, it wasn't sticking through the skin, but it was angled back.
It was angled back.
And he came up, stomped it, and then that's when he went to the back room. And I just knew because I saw this thing. I saw these bones sticking out under the skin. I'm like, yes. He broke every bone in his hand.
Yes.
And he went in the back and passed out. Now he finished the break. He bowed off, and he went back where nobody could see him and bowed off. But amazingly, somehow it wasn't broken.
No,
he had just dislocated all four of the finger bones.
Yeah,
they all dislocated and got shoved back over the wrist.
Yeah,
and then when he was back in there while he was passed out, somebody touched it and it sucked back down in the regular position. Oh my God.
And especially when he went back to Oshiha, went back to, he caught him and he took him over to the Molson room.
Mm-hmm.
They x-rayed it. They said these two went back, these two popped out.
Okay.
And they said you're lucky you didn't break them.
I can't believe you didn't break them,
cause I'll tell you another gruesome story.
All right. We're on the subject, so let's keep going.
I was doing a speed break.
Okay.
Full break day another time.
So a speed break, again, for the people who haven't listened, a speed break is where somebody's going to hold up a board by their fingertips. It's not supported. People aren't holding either side. Someone's just hanging it, basically yes. Hanging the board there, completely unsupported. And so you're going to try one of those.
I was going to try one of those. You know, I did one before, and I broke it. This time, when I hit the bolt, I hit it wrong, and I broke my hand.
Oh.
I hit it, and nothing happened. I was like, okay, nothing happened, okay. Pull back again. I twisted a little bit on my wrist and caught it right on the pinky knuckle.
Oof.
And the bolt didn't break, it just flew across the room, and I was like, yep. I looked down. The bone broke, and I see it through the skin.
Oh, you could see it crooked.
Yeah. And next man I was going to say, oh, yeah, do push-ups. It'll make you stronger. I'm like, I see that bone just flying away up like this. I'm like, nope, I got my office going. And he's like, why? I broke my hand. And then everybody's like, what? No. No, you did not break your hand, Charles. Yes, I did.
Hmm.
So immediately I go home, call my mom.
Yeah.
She comes to the Molson room and she goes, which hand is it? Right or left? Right. Again?
Wait, you broke it before?
I broke it before.
You need to start punching things with your left hand.
I didn't break the 12th time with the right hand.
Oh, okay.
It was a baseball hit the first time.
Oh, okay. It wasn't even in karate.
It was in karate. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I had this little half cast on, looked like a Jew, like a chop. Everybody's like, yeah, you grate your toes for once, Charles. That's pretty darn good. Yeah.
I don't remember that cast. I don't remember that one.
It was cool up to heel, and everybody said, they said to me like this, boy, that's a beautiful chateau, Charles. I'm like, wait till I get this brace off.
It's formed perfectly.
But it was a half cast. I could wash it and everything else.
Okay, that's good. I remember when I had it on when I broke my wrist. It was real itchy and sticky.
Yeah.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
I know you're real close with your mom, and she supported you going to those tournaments for yes. all those years. But unfortunately, she passed away
last year.
Last year,
February 7th of 2013.
Yeah, I know that was a big blow to you.
Yes.
But you know, so she helped you out in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways, yes.
But you've kind of stepped up and taken care of everything on your own. Yes. Now, you know, running the house and work and the bills and everything. That's going good?
That's going good.
Yeah. Did karate kind of help you get ready to do some of this?
Yes. And my mom did tell me one few times that if I'm gone, what are you going to do? One, probably stop karate.
Okay.
She's like, really? You're going to stop karate after I'm gone? I'm like, if that happens, yeah, I would. Because priorities are old priorities, you know? Mm-hmm. There's a death in the family, I have to step up to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dad passed away, but you two got divorced in 2001, and he died in 2005, and of New Year's Eve, and everybody's out celebrating, and I was just like, psh, whatever.
Mm.
I was pretty much, like, devastated.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and after years and years of stuff.
Right.
But I overcome that. I could probably overcome this, and I'm doing great so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she'd definitely be proud of you. Charles is as much you've been doing on your own, being real independent.
Yeah, paying the bills, and that's basically it. And working out at Anytime Fitness is lifting weights and running on the treadmill, and
still keeping your karate brushed up.
Keeping my karate brushed up, right, on the side. All right.
Because I don't know, next time we get a chance to work out together, I want to see that Shirotaro.
Okay.
That bow kata, because I got to learn. I never got to learn that. And I know you're the guy who still remembers all that stuff. We got some things we got to review together.
Yes.
All right. All right, Chuck. Well, any other closing thoughts in subjects we didn't hit before we wrap up?
There was one story, though.
All right, let's hear it.
I'm all the time, you know when Sheehan broke his hand?
Oh, was that when he was went to the tournament, or?
That was the World Championship tournament. He entered again at retirement.
Because he had retired from competition.
Yes.
And came back and entered down there.
Yes, and he broke his hand on the guy's helmet or something like that.
Yeah, they're fighting Koshki, which is like armor, so that they'll have like a padded chest plate and then a helmet with a plexiglass face shield, and it's not exactly full contact, but it's pretty damn close.
Close.
You can hit somebody about as hard as you want, but they have to stay on either the chest protector or on the face mask.
Yes.
And so he had slipped off to the side and punched somebody with his pinky knuckle, and they got what they call a barroom fracture or boxer's fracture, because a lot of times boxers get that, or somebody punches somebody in a bar and they hit with those small knuckles, it'll crack.
Yes. And he had that big old cast on his hand, and he's walking around the dojo with a half sleeve on, with a cast on, and he's keeping above his waist, and I thought, I'll just cut that sleeve off and put it through his arm and be all right. And I was in a cast all the way down. Keep it uphill. No, keep it uphill. No one can hit someone with the cast.
Well, he might not have been thinking about hitting anybody with that hand.
Right.
Yeah, I think he was maybe going to, if someone attacked him, he may have just gone left-handed on it.
Left-handed.
Right, yeah, he could take care of him with that. All right, Charles. Well, hey, thanks for sitting down with me, and it's really good to catch up with you.
Yes.
I hope we get a chance to work out together soon, wherever it is, whether it's here in Peoria at a seminar, a tournament, or, hey, get you over to Cincinnati sometime.
Sometime, yeah.
You know, you're welcome anytime. You left Kroger's over there, too, if you ever want to transfer. There's one right across the street from the dojo. You wouldn't have to walk far to work out.
No.
All right, well, buddy, it's been real good catching up with you.
You too.
Thanks for sitting down with me, and we'll have to do this again soon.
Definitely.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for this week. That's all for this week's show. Thanks to my good buddy Charles Robertson for taking the time to catch up with me. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Nihi Dibiru and Mataya.
All right, Charles, you had one more story that you forgot about.
Yes, the one more story, every time I go to a karate tournament with my mom, every time I won, she'll grab the trophy and take it with her and say, "That's my trophy, Mom." "Nope, it's my trophy. Mine is going to the shrine."
She confiscated it from you.
Yes.
Well, it was your hard work.
It's my whole world, but she had to take it.
But she took the trophy.
She took the trophy. Like, she's like, "It's my diesel money, and it's my diesel, it's my truck." So she took it with her.
She paid for the gas money, so she gets the trophy.
She gets the trophy. I pay for the event.
That's good. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.